Om sahanavavatu sahanau bhunaktu sahavidyan karavavahai tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai Om shanti 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 hi Om. Welcome back. Welcome also to the many students attending these classes online. We are coming to the end of chapter 14. We've seen several topics are in chapter. Sometimes a chapter is only one topic. Sometimes there can be several different topics in a chapter. This chapter ends with Uddhava's very elaborate question. He went on for, I think, 4 or 5 verses, and he asked a long series of questions, which Sri Krishna patiently is answering one by one by one. And you'll see, I think in today's class more than elsewhere, some of his answers are really unexpected, very insightful. And we'll see that several times, I think, this morning. So in our last class, we saw verse 40. Today we'll continue with verse 41, and I think we will conclude the text, this chapter today. Shri Guna Naira Pekshadyaha, Shri Guna Naira Pekshadyaha, Sukham Dukha Sukhatyayaha, Sukham Dukha Sukhatyayaha, Dukham Kama Sukha Peksha, Dukham kama sukha pech pandito bandha moksha vita pandito bandha moksha vita. Shrihi means wealth here, not goddess Lakshmi. So what is wealth? And a good definition of wealth is what makes you comfortable and happy. And it's so significant if we have that definition, you can be a billionaire and be amongst the most miserable people on this planet. You know, there's no guarantee that having a lot of money or a lot of investments or a lot of houses and cars is absolutely no guarantee of happiness. I don't need to tell you. You've all figured that out by now. You get something new and... I'll save that. It's going to come up in just a moment. So what is it then that is the true shrihi, the true wealth? True wealth is gunaha, good qualities, such as nair apeksha adyaha, such as detachment, etc. And just to make it a very obvious kind of observation. If you have $1 billion and you have a headache, will the $1 billion, can you buy a cure for your headache? You can. How much does Tylenol cost? Nothing, right? You can buy the company for $1 billion, but it doesn't get rid of your headache necessarily. But suppose you have the headache and you know you're okay in spite of the headache. That's detachment. That's an excellent example of detachment. Usually we get attached, oh, this headache must go away. According to whom? Are you the boss of the universe? You want the headache to go away? So here, detachment means not being rigid about what you want. The great quality, and here gunadhyaha in plural, meaning there are many, many such qualities, but we need not go into more here. So the real wealth is the wealth like good qualities, the wealth of good qualities like detachment that allow you to be content even when things don't go your way. And $1 billion won't make them always go your way. Next, sukha. What is happiness? And here again, we have such a short-sighted view of some of these words, and Sri Krishna gives some real insights. Sometimes we say that sukha is so important because we all thrive on pleasure. If there was no pleasure in life whatsoever, how miserable our lives would be. So we thrive on pleasure. We crave pleasure. Normal, but here's the problem. So you get a source of sukha, how long does it last? You go to a new movie, 2 hours, it's over. You go to a nice meal, and in an hour, it's over, and then you're left with indigestion. But whatever, going to the movie and enjoying it for 2 hours, it's like, this is not a fair example, but in my youth, all of us kids, we were taking drugs. You get high, and you enjoy yourself for a few hours, and then it's over. How different, and this is not to justify one or criticize the other, but just to make an interesting comparison. You go to the movie, you enjoy it for 2 hours. You take the drugs, you enjoy it for 2 hours. I'm not saying they're the same, but the consequences are the same. You end up where you started. So, and mere enjoyment of worldly pleasures cannot be that valuable, then what is the real sukha? According to Sho, he's redefining these words for us. He says the real sukha is dukkha sukha atyayaha. Atyaya means that which goes beyond, that which transcends. He says the real sukha is that which transcends the ups and downs of life. Sukha, dukkha, sukha, dukkha. That which transcends life means an abiding inner peace or contentment that was there before you went to the movie, it's there while you're watching the movie, and it's there after the movie comes to an end. That abiding inner peace is the real sukha. And here we get some of Uddhava's questions were in pairs, and here we get an answer in a pair, sukha and dukkha. What is the real dukkha? Dukkha, of course, is suffering, but Sri Krishna puts his own I've been using this word, and I'm ambivalent about it. He puts his own spin on these words. And I'm ambivalent because the word spin has a fairly negative connotation in modern times. Let's say his own interpretation is better than spin. So Sri Krishna's interpretation of dukkha is kama sukha apeksha. Apeksha as an expectation. An expectation for what? Sukha, the pleasure of kama, some enjoyable activity. I gave the example of going out to a meal. So you go to that restaurant, your favorite restaurant, you go there with the intention of having a wonderful meal, you have that expectation. And what is the result? Your stomach gets upset. It happens. No matter how good the food is, our stomachs can be indifferent. You know how that works. So for some reason, your stomach is indifferent, and instead of enjoying the food, you end up with an upset stomach after eating. So what is your experience of the restaurant? Certainly not sukha. Why? Because you have sukha apeksha. You have an expectation. And this is a setup for disappointment. Yet you know this so well. When you expect something good to happen, if it doesn't happen, you're disappointed. If it happens, it's a letdown. Right? Because you discover it's not such a big deal. And further, the elation you have over getting what you wanted goes away so quickly. So these, suppose, this is a shortcut Vedanta. When I say shortcut Vedanta, I mean Vedanta without any teaching, which means it's not Vedanta at all. But people talk like this, especially this so-called Neo-Vedanta. Neo-Vedanta is basically the same Siddhanta, the same bottom line, same non-duality, but without the teaching methodology we use. So in Neo-Vedanta, they'll say, you suffer because of your expectations. Correct. Absolutely correct. You suffer because of expectations. And then the Neo-Vedanta teacher says, therefore, give up all your expectations. And that's it. That's all you have to do. Does it work? It doesn't work. We require all this methodology. Okay. And last one here, Panditaha. By the way, in the next verse comes Murkha, the opposite. Pandita, wise. Murkha, my guru liked to say, otherwise. So here, who is really wise, Pandita? And it's used a lot in the sense of scholarship. And scholarship, at best, it can get you a job in a university. And universities are notoriously bad places to work because you don't get much salary, and this tenure is almost impossible nowadays. It's difficult to get a tenured position. So scholarship is not at all what Sri Krishna has in mind here. He says, Panditaha, Pandit is one who is Bandha Moksha Vit, one who knows what is Bandha, bondage, and one who knows what is moksha, liberation. And this pundit knows what is bondage and liberation because he or she is liberated, mukta. And that's the highest. What knowledge can you gain that will give you uninterrupted contentment? Perfect peace. Can you get that at a university? Can you get that in any kind of conventional study? No way. So the uniqueness of these Vedantic studies is that they can culminate in that perfect peace and contentment. Therefore, a real pandita is one who has gained liberation, who knows the problem of bondage and knows the freedom of liberation. Next verse. Murko dehadyaham buddhihi. Murko dehadyaham buddhihi. Pantha man nigama smritaha. Pantha man nigama smritaha. Utpatashchitta vikshepaha. Utpatashchitta vikshepaha swarga sattva gunodayaha swarga santa. We have a number of pairs here, but they don't line up on the verse boundaries. So we just got done with pandit. So the otherwise is the murkha, the fool. And what a definition he gives. Dehari aham buddhihi. Aham buddhi is we translate it as identification. You have I-ness, the sense of I-ness, identification, dehari in the body, mind, senses, etc. Not just, by the way, not just body and mind. How about identification with your job, your profession, identification with your grown children, identification with your house, identification with your, you know, the friends you know. You know people in high places. So you get identified with that kind of status. This is a fool who becomes identified with all of that. To make it short, we've said in this class many times, whatever you are identified with becomes a source of suffering. If you're identified with your body, when your body is sick, I am sick. If you're identified with your mind, if sadness is present in your mind, you don't say sadness is present in my mind. You say, I am sad. And if you're identified with your house or your grown children, and your house needs a lot of repairs and your children aren't doing so well, then you become really upset. If the house needs to be fixed, fix it. If the children aren't doing so well, are you in charge of them? When they were born, did you get a certificate of ownership? You get the point. Your children have their own karma. You do the best you can to support them, but then it's a little healthy detachment here is really, really important. But a murkha is one who gets identified with all of this and therefore becomes subject to all these kinds of suffering. Then we have another pair. The pair is panta, a path, and an utpata, the wrong path, the path that leads you where you want to go and the path that leads you astray, as people say. So what is the true panta? The true path is one. It's smritaha. It is considered to be mat nigamaha, the path that culminates in reaching, he uses the pronoun mat, me, the path that leads to me. Sri Krishna is teaching this to Uddhava. The true path is that which leads to me, puts you on that spiritual track. And utpata, the wrong path, is the path which is chitta vikshepaha, that which distracts your chitta, your mind, because the typical thing, you're on the right path, the path to Sri Krishna, and then you see on the side, oh, look at that. And that starts looking so interesting that you go off the path and disaster shortly thereafter ensues, as it were. Long ago, I gave this example to teenagers, you know, just teenagers. When you tell a teen you need self-control, they get it. But then you say you have to be in control of your behavior 100% of the time. That rubs the wrong way. I know I have to be, you know, the teen will say, I know I have to control myself, but all the time? Don't I get a break now and then? Can't I just relax and be myself? This is a typical teenage thinking. And the example I would give the teenagers is if you are, if you're riding a horse, and if you're on a trail, and you have to be alert and be in control of that horse all the time. Suppose you want a little break. Do I have to be in control all the time? The teenager asks. So he says, suppose you drop the reins just for 5 seconds. In those 5 seconds, a horse can go off the trail, and there's a cliff usually on the side of the trail. And you go over there, so being out of control even momentarily can have big, big consequences. That's an important message, not just for teens, but for all of us. So that vikshepa, that distraction, even a momentary distraction, can have big consequences. That is panta, the right path, and utpata, the wrong path. The next pair is swarga and naraka. Naraka comes in the next verse here. What is swarga? And nice definitions. So often, too often, we get this very narrow idea that swarga is some kind of heavenly domain and naraka is a hellish domain. And that's a very physical way of envisioning heaven and hell, as if you're driving along the interstate and there are different cities. The sign says, Swarga, 10 miles. I wonder if there's any town named Swarga Even in India, I wonder if I'm sure no one's named a town Naraka. No one. But somebody could name their. In fact, there is a in this country. There's at least one town named Paradise. How's that? I want to go to Paradise. Paradise, 10 miles. All right. Swarga, according to the doctrine of karma, Swarga need not be a physical place. It could be, but it need not be. Swarga is defined as a lifetime of pure enjoyment, because it's a life born of only good karmas. So a life of pure enjoyment. Naraka is defined as a life of continued suffering, uninterrupted suffering. So here, Sri Krishna uses that kind of definition in terms of experience. What is Swarga? Sattva guna uddayaha. Swarga is the rise, uddaya, of sattva guna, good qualities in your mind and body, because as long as your mind and body are sattva guna pradhana, as mostly embodiment of the good quality of sattva, you won't suffer. As long as that sattva guna is present in sufficient measure to push all the rajas and tamas out of the way. So Sri Krishna describes Swarga not as a place, but as an experience. And he does the same for Naraka. Not a place, but an experience. He says, Narakastama unnaho, Narakastama unnaho, Bandhur gururaham sakhe, Bandhur gururaham sakhe, Griham shariram manushyam, Griham shariram manushyam, Gunadhyo hyadhya uchyate, Gunadhyo hyadhya uchyate. So second of the pair is Naraka. Naraka is tamaha unnaha. Ut is up. Unnaha is when tamas rises. So notice his definition. The experience of sattva being predominant, which is an experience of which is wonderful, pleasant, free from suffering, he calls that swarga. An experience where tamas is prevalent is what he calls what he calls naraka, hell. So tamas having so many meanings, but finally indicating suffering. That which is conducive to absence of suffering, just to put it in simple terms, a lifetime free from suffering is swarga, a lifetime of pure suffering, uninterrupted suffering, is naraka. And those lives are probably not possible on this planet. You could probably make up some kind of argument for some possibility, but generally such our lives on this earthly plane are usually a combination of sukha dukkha. So this would be considered neither swarga or naraka. Next, who is the true bandhu, the true friend? The true friend is not one who gives you money when you're broke. The true friend, he says, guru. The friend is one who will guide you standing at your side. They use the term marga bandhu. Nice term. Is one who will walk down the path with you and give you guidance every step of the way. And that's a conventional definition of guru. A guru is not someone who sits on an ivory tower and gives his edicts that everyone has to follow. But a guru is one who lives side by side with everyone else, goes through the same difficulties of life, And walking that path with you gives you that guidance. So that Marga Bandhu, that guru who is walking with you, is the real Bandhu. And who is that guru? So in this case, Sri Krishna is instructing Uddhava. So Sri Krishna says that guru is aham, me. I am that guru. Sakhe, O friend, O Uddhava, I am that guru, that advisor who will walk with you through life. What is griham? Griham is where you dwell. Sri Krishna puts his, again, not spin, his own interpretation. He says it's not where you dwell. In fact, I'm going to put some words into Sri Krishna's mouth here. He would say it's not exactly, the dwelling, of course, is your body. But the dwelling place, your body, is not exactly where you dwell. Sri Krishna would say, it's where I dwell. I dwell within you as your true nature. So it is shariram manushyam. It is a human body. Sri Krishna says, I dwell in every being. I dwell as the true self. Then we come to another pair, which is adhya and daridra. Adhya means wealthy. Adhya, one who is wealthy. Daridra, you probably know, one who is poor. So first of all, who is the one who is wealthy? In fact, we already had that Shri, the first one, wealth. So here, instead of talking about what is wealth, the question and answer is with regard not to wealth, but one who is wealthy, one who has wealth. He, adhyaha, indeed, one who is adhya, wealthy, rich, is one who is guna adhya, uchyate, one who is understood to be rich with qualities. You can be rich with money, fine, but to be rich with qualities. And that's where the richness of life. None of us are so naive that we're going to completely dismiss the pragmatic value of money. And it's worth remembering that there are lots of people who don't have enough resources to meet their basic needs. And if you can't meet your basic needs, there is an extraordinary amount of suffering in life. You're scrambling around. Think about people who have to scramble to find food. You know, in places, and sadly, food scarcity and conflict get connected. In Sudan, they have this civil war going. 1 million people have food insecurity because of the civil war. And you've all heard in Gaza that war has been going on there for almost a year. People are scrambling like anything to find food and clean water. What a horrible life. So here, there may be poverty, but amongst them, we're going to see daridra in the next verse, but here, a wealthy person is not merely a one with means. A wealthy person is one who is free from suffering because they have inner maturity. They have inner qualities. That's what Sri Krishna calls a person. Guna, adhya, wealth, the wealth of qualities. Qualities meaning spiritual and emotional growth. Then, the flip side is daridra, which we'll see at the beginning of the next verse here. Daridro yastva santushtaha, daridro yastva santushtaha, kripano yo vichendriyaha, kripano yo jitendriyaha, guneshva sakta dhirisho, guneshva sakta dhirisho, guna sango viparyayaha, guna sango viparyayaha. think about in, and I want this to sound reasonable. Suppose in Gaza there is a Sufi saint. The Sufi saint has lived his or his life very, very simply. I have to just figure it out. So Sufis are mostly Sunnis. So in Palestine is mostly Sunni. I had to make sure my metaphor would make sense. So suppose there is a Sufi saint, and there must be some, I suppose, living in Gaza, and this person has lived a life of meditation, fasting, prayer, and helping people. Now, in the midst of this tragedy that they're going through right now, the food is scarce and bombs are falling. What would change for the Sufi saint? Would the Sufi saint stop meditating? Stop praying? Stop helping people, stop fasting, food scarcity. The point I'm making is that not much would change for the Sufi saint. They would remain content in spite of that horrible situation. And it's possible. You can imagine that saint staying in Gaza, assuming that the bomb didn't fall right on his head. He could indeed be content. And that is exactly Sri Krishna's definition here. He says, Daridraha, one who is poor, is yaha, one who, too, but one who is asantushtaha, santushta, content. One who is not content is poor. The Sufi fellow has nothing, doesn't even have food, but is content. Therefore, not daridra, not poor, and definitely, going back to the prior verse, adhya, he's rich in qualities. Qualities he's gained through his sadhana as a Sufi. Bhartrahari, who's famous for his poetry, in his famous Vairagya, Shatakam, 100 verses on Vairagya. In one verse, he has, one section, is a dialogue between a sadhu and a king. A very interesting dialogue. And the sadhu is giving a spiritual lecture, little discourse, pravachan, to the king. And he says, O king, notice this. I'm wearing rags. You're wearing silk robes. I have a string around my wrist. You have gold bangles and rings and all of this adorning your body. I live underneath a tree. You live in this vast palace. But the sadhu says, which of us is more content with our lives? Wow. The king has it all, and the king is not content. Santushta. So contentment depends not on the externals. Contentment depends on what's in the mind and heart. Next is kripana. Kripana is, lowly is a common translation, but a better definition is one who is to be pitied. Pitiful, I think, there's an English word, yeah. One who deserves your pity. There's a good definition. One who deserves your pity, kripana, is yaha, one who is a jitta indriyaha, one who is not in control of his senses, but in control of his actions and in control of his or her behavior. We've had this discussion about raga, dvesha so many times. One who is dragged about due to raga, dvesha. Raga, dvesha, we find sometimes metaphors. In fact, there's a story, a famous story. I don't remember all the details, but this poor fellow was riding a horse, fell off, but the foot got stuck in the harness, and his fellow is being dragged about through the dust by this powerful horse. That is an image meant to describe how it is to be dragged about by raga and dvesha. Not fun. Of course, we don't pay attention to that. We always are looking at the goal. But this fellow wasn't being very attentive, fell from the horse, being dragged about and bruised. So that person deserves pity, one who is dragged about by raga dvesha. Then what about one who is not dragged about by raga dvesha? Sri Krishna says, guneshu asakta dihi, one whose dihi, mind, is asakta, is not attached, guna, to all the quality, to all the goodies in life. One who is not attached to worldly things, one who is truly not under the spell of raga dvesha, that person he calls Isha. Now, Isha, not in the sense of God, but in a more literal sense, Lord, one who is in charge, the boss, Mr. Boss. In fact, in Hindi, actually in Urdu, isn't it? I find it interesting. The word Malik is used both for your boss and for the Uparwala, for God. So it means if you're praying in Hindustani, in Urdu, hey boss. You know, as a non-Hindi speaker, I find it amusing to see these words used in that way. So Isha here means boss in the sense of the fellow you go to work for. So that boss, he's in charge. So that boss is one who is not, that boss is not troubled by raga and dvesha. One who is not troubled by raga dvesha, that person is Isha, Malik. Malik. Okay. Finally, what about viparyayaha? One who is the opposite of that boss. One who is the opposite of the boss is guna sangaha, constantly attached to one thing after another, constantly driven by raga and dvesha, no rest. Just like for the employees, there's no rest. They need more money to buy more goodies. There's no rest for the employees. There's no rest for those who are bossed about by raga and dvesha. And that finally brings us to the end of Uddhava's long list of questions, and Sri Krishna very patiently answered each and every one of them and did so in some clever ways. And now the chapter concludes.
Eta Uddhavate Prashnaha Sarve Sadhu Nirupitaha Sarve Sadhu Nirupitaha Kim Varnite Na Bahuna Kim Varnite Na Bahuna Lakshanam Guna Dosha Yoho Lakshanam Guna Dosha Yoho. Uddhava, O cousin Uddhava, ete, these prashnaha, these questions, t
pay of yours, these questions of yours, survey all of them. All of them have been nirupitaha, explained completely, and explained how? He says, sadhu, nicely. Sadhu means good, not just a person. Anyone who's good is a sadhu, so here sadhu as an adjective. They have been properly explained, they have been well explained, nothing has been left out. If nothing has been left out, then kim varnitena bahuna, then what's the point of further elaboration, more extensive elaboration? Elaboration about what? Guna dosha yoho lakshanam. About these definitions of what is guna. Here, good and bad. That which is a good quality and that which is an undesirable quality. There's no point in more elaboration. But in literature and on even in these TV programs, there's such a thing as a cliffhanger. You know what that means. A cliffhanger is where you end something with a big question mark. You leave something hanging, something unresolved, something that is supposed to make you so interested that you buy the next book in the series or you watch the next episode of the TV series or whatever. This chapter ends with such a cliffhanger. And it's actually this verse has three lines, I should say. And in the last line, we see that cliffhanger. Let's see it, and then I'll explain the context. This is the final part of the chapter. Guna dosha drishir dosho. Guna dosha drishir dosho. Gunas tu bhaya varjitaha. Gunas tu bhaya varjinata. So, let me set the context before we see the details here. A lot of Uddhava's questions were about how to live in the light, live in the world with discernment. So Uddhava is concerned about continuing his spiritual growth in the absence of Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna is about to make his exit, so to speak. And Uddhava will no longer have Sri Krishna around to give him advice. And Uddhava is very concerned about how he can continue to live with proper discernment so he makes decisions which will lead him, as we said, on the right path and which will help him avoid the wrong path. And for that reason, a lot of his questions had to do with these pairs, where one is good and the other is not so good. So there was a panta, path leading to Sri Krishna. There's the utpata, the path leading the wrong place. There's sukha and dukkha. There's the pandita and the murkha, the fool. And all of these pairs. And Sri Krishna makes a very interesting observation here. All of these pairs applied to people become very judgmental. For example, is this person a pundit or a murkha? Is this person in charge of their behavior, or is this person subject to being dragged about by raga dvesha? This kind of judgment is really common in every arena of life, including spiritual life. So in other arenas of life, not you as an individual, but you in general, you judge people according to how are they dressed? First judgment, right? How are they dressed? You see the person from 10 yards away, and judgment has already begun. If you're meeting the person for the first time, how do they speak? What kind of accent do they have? Where were they born? you're starting to go on, making these judgments, in fact, from the language they use, then you start inferring things about their education. If they speak really nicely, or if they're using some very crude kind of language, you're making more and more judgments about them. That can't be a good thing, right? All these to be observant is fine, but to be judgmental, this person is useless, is a very damaging judgment. No matter, you know, the person, I'm smiling, for the person you will never judge as being useless is a person who is just like you. But anyone else is subject to this kind of evaluation and being judged as being useless. This is wrong thinking all the way. Anyway, my point is it's harmful, it's undesirable in worldly life, it's harmful and undesirable in spiritual life. Yet, is that person free from raga dvesha? Is that person enlightened? Is that person murka? You won't use that word. So, you know, to make judgments about sadhaka, spiritual aspirants, is just as harmful as making judgments about how a person is dressed. And Sri Krishna picks up on that. And he suggests that Uddhava, he won't say it directly. You know, Sri Krishna is way too intelligent and way too polite to directly criticize Uddhava for some of his questions that seem judgmental. So Sri Krishna handles it in a very skillful way. Sri Krishna says, guna dosha drishihi doshaha. He says, drishi, this discernment between guna and dosha, between quality and defect, all of this kind of discernment, most of your questions, Uddhava, all of this is dosha. It is itself a problem. To compartmentalize people at a worldly level or at a spiritual level is so harmful, because every person is so much more complex than we think they are. And just to make that point really clear, what about you? Into what compartment shall we put you? And you're thinking, wait a minute. You can put me in a compartment? Yeah, how about smart or not so smart? Well, you'll resist any kind of compartment, even political ones. Republican, Democrat. So people resist being labeled, being compartmentalized, because who we are as individuals is incredibly complex. And that's what Sri Krishna is pointing out here. It's actually a defect to reduce someone to being A or B. What about C, D, E, F, G, and the rest of it? It's not this or that. It's not black and white. And that's the defect of Uddhava's question. The question was kind of black and white. Pandita or Murkha? Black and white. Most people are someplace in between. I said, what compartment? Smart or not so smart? Someplace in between. Everyone. But then if you only have these two compartments, Pandita or Murkha, then you're forced to categorize a person in a very unhelpful manner. So this is a problem. And Sri Krishna points it out. This itself is a defect. This drishi, this point of view, this worldview, this perspective, better word, this perspective about deciding if a person is like A or if they're like B. He says this kind of division is itself defective. And then he concludes, he says, Sri Krishna says, gunaha tu ubhaya varjitaha tu. But ubhaya varjita, avoiding both, avoiding this categorization, and especially avoiding this black and white thinking. He says that is a guna, avoiding black and white thinking. Allow me just to make an observation here. In dialogue between people, in the dialogue we see in social media, in dialogues we see in the press, there are so many issues. And issues which are debated on and on and on. In this country, a good example is abortion or LGBT rights. And these issues have been debated and debated, and sometimes the debate goes one way, sometimes the debate goes the other way. It goes on and on. One thing to notice about all these debates is that the debaters take extreme positions, black and white. Abortion is killing babies. A woman has a right to do with her body what she wants. These are extreme positions. A or B, is abortion killing babies? Or is abortion a woman's right? It's her body. These are both unreasonable, extreme positions. A fetus is not a baby. And if the fetus is defective, or if the fetus is a result of incest or rape, these are complications. And also, it's a woman's body. Well, wait a minute, there's also dharma. Dharma means a woman has to treat her body dharmically. That fetus is part of her body, so there's an issue of dharma here as well. But you see the problem, and I'm sorry I'm being a little emphatic about it, but it's such a common problem. Every single issue that's debated is debated by groups who have taken unreasonably extreme positions. And that's why the debates go on endlessly. And it's sad, because when you've taken these extreme positions, the one who is on the other side, they are so utterly, they become repugnant to you. Like in politics, to Democrats, Republicans are repugnant, and vice versa, to Republicans, some Democrats are repugnant. This is the kind of divisiveness that comes up when we take these really extreme positions. I don't often end a class like this, but today allow me to. I have a request for you. And the request is, when you get into any of these debates, look at the positions and see if any of the positions are extreme, including your own positions. Extreme positions are wrong. We live in a world that's not black and white. We live in a world where everything is in between. Everything, there are gradations. And to oversimplify these complicated issues and make them into black and white, killing babies versus it's a woman's body, this is harmful. Let us stop oversimplifying these situations. Let's try to have a more balanced and reasonable response, and especially avoiding these extreme positions. And even though that's not really Sri Krishna's topic here, that's exactly what he says in this last line. He says, Ubhaya Varjitaha, to avoid both, contextually, both means extreme positions. Pandita, Murka. Sukha, Dukha. Attachment, detachment. And Sri Krishna says, Ubhaya Varjitaha, to avoid these extreme, both of these, to avoid these extreme positions, he says, that is gunaha, that is a quality that should be embraced. So just a little bit of a tangent here, but something important. That brings us to the end of this wonderful chapter. The cliffhanger is Uddhava now is really confused by this last statement because they've been talking about A and B, A and B, A and B. And now Uddhava, at the beginning of the next chapter, says, wait a minute, I'm not supposed to tell the difference between dharma and adharma? Everything is just in between? There's no difference? And Uddhava gets really confused. And that's where the next chapter begins, and we'll see that when we meet next week. Tomorrow, Sunday, we have our Vedanta class, Shankara's great text, Upadesha Sahasri, at 10 o'clock, followed by Satsang at 11. Come with your questions. We'll conclude with our prayers. Om Ganana Hantwa Ganapatigam Avamahe Kavinga Vina Mupamashravastamam Jeshtarajam Brahmanam Brahmanaspatahana Shrinvan Uttabhisira Sadhanam Om Mahaganapataye Namaha Ishvaro Gururhatmeti Murti Bhairavibhagine Vyomavad Vyapta Dehaya Dakshina Murtaye Namaha Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanura Mardanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat Gurum Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha, Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kashchid Dukha Bhag Bhavet, Asato Ma Satgamaya, Tamaso Ma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritangamaya Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Tat Sat.